what I wanted to look at today, just to wrap up our focus on the foods that Rabban Gamliel is speaking about, why are we so food focused in the telling? In other words, you could have imagined a narrative experience of L'saper b'yitziat Mitzrayim to tell the story of leaving Egypt that isn't particularly focused on food, and yet Rabban Gamliel really hones in on these three foods as opposed to these three elements of the story, or even what we get elsewhere in the Mishnah of starting from degradation, ending in praise. So what is it about these foods, and why foods at all? And that's what I want to take a look at as we close out our week. Okay, the theory that I'm putting on the table is that we are enacting a certain aspect of the verses that we're quite familiar with because they appear throughout the Haggadah, but an aspect of the verses that speak about the telling or the asking of this whole experience. And that particular focus is on the word zeh or zot. Zeh, this or that. And as we're going to see, zeh is not just sort of a grammatical interlude. It actually, for rabbinic literature throughout, not just related to Pesach, zeh often, if not always, indicates some sort of seeing and indicating with your finger, like a pointing. Whenever you see a zeh, and therefore there's something that you need to point at when you're asking these questions. Or to put it another way, the reason I'm asking the questions, the reason I'm telling the story, is because of something that I see and that I'm pointing at, as opposed to a memory of a narrative or something that's more ephemeral. There's something concrete that's catalyzing my telling, and I'm pointing to it. So let's just take a look at some of the examples of where this appears. I'm starting actually to back up. We saw this in Shabbat HaChodesh last week, where we start the story in chapter 12 of Exodus with this word zeh. God says to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. This month is for you a first of months. This is the first to you for the months of the year. Okay, so this is where the calendar is set. And this is in some ways its own aspect of freedom, where we get to own our own relationship to time. We get to set it. But the Midrash indicates that HaChodesh HaZeh, the Zeh aspect of it, is sort of a pedagogic hint of how Moshe is instructing the people Israel about what it means to have your own calendar. So let's just take a look at that midrash. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Amar Rabbi Yishmael, Moshe Herad HaChodesh LiYisrael. Moses showed the month, the new moon, the Chadash, the new moon, the Chodesh, to Israel, and said to them, Kazer E V'Kadesh, when you see it like this, that's when you sanctify it. That's when you declare this to be the new moon and set it for all the generations. This is how you're going to do it going forward. So you could imagine HaChodesh HaZeh, Moshe's pointing to the moon. See it like this? That's the moment that you know that it's time to declare a new moon. So already we have sort of in the narrative, or maybe in the headline of the narrative, the experience of seeing the word Zeh, and pointing in the rabbinic understanding, and pointing not just as a, wow, I noticed that, but also pointing as an aspect of teaching. It's pointing out to the students, as it were, B'nai Yisrael, about how to relate to this. So let's take a look at the verses that I think relate to the foods on the table. I haven't quite seen this spelled out, so it's a working theory that I'm bringing here. But notice these are some of the verses that we recite as part of our ritual enactment of the story, at least in the Haggadah's version of it. And they each have a zerazot, right? When your children say to you, Maha avodah hazot lachem, right? What is this service, this avodah, this worship that you're doing? And then you should respond, Zevach Pesach Hu L'Adonai. That's the Passover sacrifice to Hashem, who passed over the houses of Israelites in Egypt in spite of the Egyptians, but saved their houses. So you can imagine somebody saying, Mahavodah Hazot. We think of this as, in the voice of the Rasha, of the wicked child. Oh, this thing that you're doing, what are you even doing? What is it to you and not to me? But imagine that there's actually a Pesach on the table and he's pointing to it, or the child is pointing to it. Your children, says the verse, are pointing to something and they're saying, what is this? Literally this. So there's something that's in front of us. And we get the Zot or the Zeh in other places. It is because of this that Hashem did for me when I went free from Egypt, which is a little bit of a hard sentence to translate anyways. But again, you see the Zeh, and you can imagine here, not as the asker pointing to something, but as the explainer pointing to something. I'm pointing this out to you. And there has to be something that I'm pointing to, ba'avur Zeh. And the last one, mazot, what is this? Without any, a fanfare, it's literally the word zot is the center of the sentence. What is this? And again, it's not a theoretical what is this. It's not a conceptual what is this. It's almost like a child, like, I see this thing, I'm pointing to it. I'm saying, what is this? What is this? And so I'm actually noticing things in front of me. And then you'll say, "Bechozek yado tianu Hashem mitzrayim." That's because God took us out of Egypt with a strong hand. So the sort of indicator of the verses is zeh or zot, and that's going to lead me to notice things and ask things, and therefore that's part of what I'm setting up on the table is things that we can point to, either point to as the instructor or point to as the questioner, and perhaps that's why Rabban Gamliel is so focused on the Pesach Matzah and Maror as the things that you have to mention, because we have three zeh or zots in the verses, and we have to point to three different things. We get a little bit of a hint of this in one of the midrashim in Mechilta Rabbi Yishmael, the old midrash on Shmot. This is the Yachol Meirosh Chodesh part that appears in our Haggadah. Could it be that when you're telling your children, when are you telling your children? Could we even start, at the beginning of the month, as opposed to waiting for the middle of the month? And say, no, because the verse indicates that we're not talking about the beginning of the month. And then the Midrash says, could I even tell the story while it's daytime? Why is this a nighttime activity? Could I say it while it's daytime? No, it has to be Ba'avur Zeh, V'sha'asha matzua u'maror munachim lefanecha al shulchanecha. Right? When is the moment that I'm speaking about the going out? Well, the verse says, Ba'avur Zeh, because of this, the Zeh. And the Midrash understands that as, oh, the Zeh must indicate there's something on your table that you're pointing to. The Matzah and Maror are before you on the table, and therefore you're pointing to it. And that only happens at night when you're eating your meal. And therefore, the Zeh in this Midrash is not just a conceptual Zeh that's broad, but rather a something specific that I'm pointing you to. The Matzah and Maror are on the table before you. And the Torah Tamimo's later commentary to 20th century, early 20th century, says this is because they could point to them with their finger. And that is derived from the language of Ba'avur Zeh. So he's just making explicit what the Midrash seems to understand. I'm pointing to something with my finger. This is the reason, because of this, and I'm pointing to something. So the sort of whole setup of the meal is a tactile one in which you're indicating things. It's not a story that you can tell on the couch with no props. You need the things that you can point to, and that's why we're sitting at the table together. Now, you might say, as the Midrash says here, well, the matzah and the maror are before you, and those are two of the three things that Rabban Gamliel is having before him. What about the Pesach? I mean, after all, after the end of the Beit HaMikdash, after the temple is destroyed, apparently we don't do the Pesach sacrifice. So if I'm pointing to things on the table and I have three zeh or zot verses, but I only have two things I'm pointing to, how am I getting around that? Or to put it another way, if Rabban Gamliel is so wrapped up in props that I'm pointing to, I get matzah and maror, but what about the Pesach, which we don't have munachim lefanech, we don't have in front of us? Well, turns out that Rabban Gamliel might have had a Pesach substitute that was on the table, something called a gedi mikulas, a goat that was prepared in a particular way, seems to be a reminder of the Pesach sacrifice. And we get that in a couple of testimonies here. There are in a totally other context, but in Mishnah Beitza, we get the concept that Rabban Gamliel was strict about three things like Beit Shammai, and he also had three things that he was lenient about, And now we get the list of what is he lenient about. And he says one of them is even though the sages forbid this particular kind of goat that was made in a folded kind of way, maybe because they don't want to reenact something that could only be done when the temple is standing, nevertheless, Rav Gamliel is making on this. He's lenient on this. He allows you to make such a gedi mikulas, such a sort of Pesach substitute, a meat substitute, even though we're not in the time of the temple. And we get elsewhere in the tractate of Pesachim itself, one does not roast the Pesach on a spit or a grill. Rabbi Tzadok said, it happened that Rabban Gamliel said to his servant, Tabi, go out and roast for us the Pesach on a grill. Now here again, there are two Rabban Gamliels at least in rabbinic history. And some people say, oh, this must be Rabban Gamliel the elder who was living at the time of the temple. How else could he have asked to have the Pesach made unless it was living at the time of the temple? But the truth is the servant named Tabi is the servant of Rabban Gamliel II, Rabban Gamliel, the one we know from Yavne. And so it seems like here, it's not just that he's allowing you to do a gedi mikulas, this particular kind of goat that everyone else forbids you from doing, but Rabban Gamliel himself is allowing you to do something that he was calling the Pesach. And he was like, not only, and here's how you roast it, right? You know, do you do it on a spit or a grill? That's the technicality. But notice he allows you to do it on the grill. But he's saying, Tzlei lanu et ha-Pesach, right? Make the Pesach. So you could imagine in Rabban Gamliel's Seder, right, which focuses on food, that indeed, not only is he having matzah and maror munachim lefanav in front of him, but he also has a Pesach. It's not the Pesach that we bring in the Beit HaMikdash, that's no longer around, but it's sort of the Pesach substitute that he's grilling up. And that's part of why he's able to say, you got to say these three things, indicating them with your finger, fulfilling the zot or the zeh in the verses, and that's part of what we're actually experiencing on that Pesach. So for those of you who have the brisket or the zroa, that's part of what we're talking about here. The last thing I'll just end with is the other great zot that we have that's related to the verses in Ezekiel that we recite in the Magid section, and also the moment in which God redeems us fully. It's another pointing. Well, this will end. The Holy Blessed One, this is when the children were being born in the fields because the Egyptians would otherwise kill them if they weren't born in secret. So the children would be born in the fields and then they would be left by their parents who couldn't take care of them. But God would take care of them in the fields and raise them. And then God would show each one of them their house, bring them to their parents, sort of like the orphanage was in the field, and God would bring them to the parents and say to each of them, your father's name is so-and-so and your mother's name is such-and-such. Get them ready to sort of have the meeting with their parents. Open the door and the parents would take in the child and the mother would ask and say, who raised you? How did you like live? And the child would say, this beautiful lad whom there is none like. Here, he's outside and he brought me here. And she would say, show him to me. So they would go outside and look all over, but they couldn't find it. Therefore, when they came to the sea much later, when they were redeemed at the splitting of the sea, and they saw God, they would show their mothers by pointing with their fingers, Zei Li, this is my God, Zei Li Bian Vehu, this is my God and I will glorify him. This is the one who raised me. So there's sort of a recognition moment in the redemptive crossing of the sea that these children are experiencing because they remember being taken care of by God in the Midrash's imagination in the fields and then brought to their parents. So that's sort of the ultimate pointing out, the ultimate child experience of pointing to something redemptive.